1 to 10, Mark, how excited are you for the next playtest?
You can't see my eyes, but my eyes have like darted back into my head because Jason said a word that we're not allowed to say on the show.
We say it now. We're excited. Come on. Woo! There's excitement.
I think there's an aspect of, you can, this is a not mic thing, but I do think there's an aspect of us sounding flat as we're just not enthusiastic people on the mic.
Oh, okay.
Like when you're telling jokes, I don't know when you're telling jokes. Like there's not a lot of inflection in your joke telling. Yeah. That's not to say you're not funny.
No, it's deliberate. Yeah.
But like you keep that even like, you're like, I'm excited and I'm not buying your like excitement even on your excited scale. So like if there's like, I refuse, I will not like ham up my tone on the mic to like change some amount of affect.
Let's go.
Yeah, no. You can get me talking about dance fighting and I'll still have a more flat affect than.
That's true. Yeah.
I love dance fighting.
Yeah, that's right. You're never. I guess my partner would say the same thing about me when I'm talking about things I like. That's just who we are. We're excited inside though, right?
Very excited inside.
I'm Hunter Pence and you're listening to the Misplay Podcast. Oh yeah.
Hello, and welcome to the Misplay, where we don't read the little text in Slay the Spire. My name is Mark.
My name is Jason.
I love that you're playing Slay the Spire however many years after.
It's been a long time. It's not new?
No.
I know the team had been playing the digital version a long time ago. I remember hearing people talk about it and see screenshots. I just started playing the board game for the first time last week. I really like the board game, and I got the app as well. So I've been playing on the app, but the text, I have an iPhone 14, I have a small phone, and the text is really small. And a lot of times I'm just like, I don't need to read it. Because you have to like click on the little icon to show what the debuff is or what your buff is. There was a monster where I was attacking it, but every time I attacked it, it attacked me back for more damage. I didn't read it. I was like, oh. So little text on a phone is hard.
It is a fun game. I play the digital game on airplanes when I fly.
It's going to be my new thing too.
Nice.
That and Bellatro. Ooh, I'm just going to start taking flights everywhere. I don't even care anymore. Used to be afraid of flying.
It's a bold claim for a dude who doesn't like flying.
Well, we didn't take a plane ride together, but this weekend we did take a road trip. We headed down to San Jose to go to Game Market West.
You stole my intro a little bit. I was just going to like read the list of games that I wrote down when I was like, oh, we got to take notes for the show. And so I wrote down all the games that caught my eye. So I was going to say, what does this list mean to you? And you're supposed to like get to Game Market West. Way to kill the bit.
That's why you're not in charge of bits.
You laughed. My bit is great.
I did laugh a little. Can you tell people what Game Market West is?
Game Market West was I would describe as a Bay Area local game designer trade show. It was held at the Guild House in San Jose, which is like a board game cafe. You can go in, get games. There's a food cafe bar and people play games there. They hosted Game Market West, where a bunch of local designers brought their games. They had tabling set up to sell, demo, and promote and collaborate or network. And they had a special guest, prominent game designer Tom Lehman, famous for Race for the Galaxy.
And I will add, in our last episode, Randy O'Connor was on the show and talked about the Golden Gate Game Makers. And this was an event that was hosted by the Golden Gate Game Makers.
Remember it's almost a year. Remember last year when we came home from Gen Con and were like, inspired. There was literally inspired awe at Gen Con. I felt a little bit of the same magic at Game Market West. It was smaller, it was a little more intimate, but it was cool to be around a dense space of people that were really passionate about board games again. It's not a space that I spend a lot of time in, and at the end of the day, you're like, well, you got to spend more time in it. And so it was nice to come away from that and then go into the team meeting that we had this week.
There were games there that weren't for me. They're not the games that I would typically play. And I still really enjoyed the conversations that we had with those game designers. If for nothing else than to see how people interact when you're sitting at a table. You know, I had the thought many times while I was walking between the booths going, how am I going to pitch somebody Animal Kingdom in 45 seconds and get them to go, oh, I want to play that game? That's a hard task. That's going to be a hard task. I think even if it was Slay the Spire or Balatro, right? Games I know I really love. I think if somebody pitched those games to me over a table in just 30 seconds, I'm probably like, yeah, okay, cool, thanks. So that was probably one of the biggest takeaways for me, was thinking about how I am going to talk to other people who are just walking by me in the future, how to pull them in.
I think that's fair. I found myself more drawn to the games and the vendors, the designers, that had a very crisp way of telling the story. I think We Need to Talk is actually a great example of this, where they were like, oh, you know, you can read the cards this way, or you can read the card that way. And they had a picture and were like, oh, you could look at this as, remember that hike we went on where we had such a good time, versus remember that hike we went on where I got stuck carrying the bag. More and more in looking at board games and design of games, I'm looking for some element of that story. And maybe that's a little bit of overattachment to tabletop role-playing games, which there was a very compelling one that I sent Peter. He just sent me a text today saying he bought it, so he'll let me know how it is. But this storytelling component, this moment that Randy talked a lot about on when we had him on the show last week, and I hope we're going to talk about it today, but when we were in the car and I turned to you and was like, what's the moment? What's the story? What's the piece that we want to make sure is in Animal Kingdom? And jury's still out, but that's okay.
You asked me that question over the weekend. I haven't answered it yet.
And that's fine. And I think part of what we're going to talk about today, after the last two meetings that we've had with the team, I feel like we will have that collective vision sooner rather than later.
We should add, We Need the Talk is a trick-taking game. It's a trick-taking dating game, except it's not about dating. It's about ending a relationship. It's a trick-taking breakup game.
A trick-taking game for breakups?
And blew my mind. So many times now I've run into a golf game. The other game that we played, Massiverse, it felt like MMA Gauntlet. This one's dating it. The next time we go out, there's going to be a supermarket game. I just know it.
Not to spend all of our words on We Need to Talk, but I could talk a lot more about that game. And I felt a very strong impulse to buy it if I were ready to buy another board game right now. But I loved their pitch because it wasn't just about the game. It was, I wanted to find something that wasn't sci-fi fantasy, outer space, kind of the very prominent board game tropes of what types of settings we see board games in.
And I almost bought it as well. I was thinking about it, and not just for, oh, this would be cool because we wanted to make a dating game, but because they pitched it well. And I really liked the person who was talking to us. We did end up buying two games. Mark, you bought?
I bought the collection of Pacific Northwest nature-inspired card games. It's a book of six card games that span different genres. There was a solitaire game. There was a deck builder. There was a trick-taking game. There was an exploration and matching game. And there were a couple of others. But it was all meant to be played with components you have at home and could all be played with one or two traditional playing card decks.
When I saw what you had purchased, it took me back to season one, episode one, where we talked about the type of gamers we were. And you had said that you grew up playing card games, spades, hearts. And it was just cool to see you pick up a game that required you to use just a deck of cards. I'd also like to think that City Square Studios would also really like that choice as well.
That was the developer. The developer of those games is probably the person I spent the most time talking to. And I shared the fun interview opportunity that we had with the folks at City Square. I thought they felt very kindred spirits to me.
Nice.
What'd you buy?
I purchased, you know that I have built escape rooms for my students. I'm currently working on one right now, Escape from Alcatraz. So a big fan of escape rooms. And I saw when we were playing Massiverse at Solus Gaming's table, next to us was a booster pack of cards. It was an escape room in a booster pack. I thought that was just a really neat concept, and it was just $10. And so it's called, you're going to help me out here, because it has a, there's a French word in this name, and I don't want a supercut of me trying to pronounce this. Murder at the
Atelier.
Yes. So it's an escape room that I can play with my wife. So I'm excited. I'm looking forward to cracking open the booster pack.
Pretty good haul for a couple hours spent in San Jose.
We haven't even talked about the highlight though.
Board Game Casual.
Yes. We had the opportunity and the chance to connect with RJ from Board Game Casual.
You might as well just go into the sponsor bit now, because we'll say all the glowing things that we experienced this weekend with them.
Today's episode is sponsored by Board Game Casual. Board Game Casual is a YouTube channel welcoming people into the board game hobby with video reviews, recommendations, unboxings, tips for accessorizing on a budget, and more. Every community needs an ambassador like Board Game Casual. You see the polished veneer and the well-edited, clever videos on YouTube regularly. You did it to me on purpose. I know you did.
No.
Regularly. All the time. On YouTube, all the time. But this past weekend, Mark and I had a chance to meet them in person at Game Market West, and we saw live and in person that cheerful, positive disposition is not just a product of a well-scripted and well-produced videos. Board Game Casual was on the event floor taking videos to make everyone else in the Bay Area board game community look good. Give them a like, a share, and a subscribe so you can say, I knew them when, long before they released their own stellar game. Find them at Board Game Casual on YouTube, at Board Game Casual channel. But yeah, it was really great to meet them and to talk. I thought it was even cooler to watch them in action as they were interviewing game developers at their booths, how they were filming their demos and talking. Like, that was cool to see.
I really loved when you spotted them for the first time and were like, I hear the voice.
Yeah.
It was tough for me to hear. I was distracted by the ambient noise, but you nailed it in one. Didn't have to look long to find RJ.
Where are we?
Making progress on the very thorny beast of collectively designing a board game.
Well said. Well said. But how do we, that makes total sense to me. I know what you're saying. How do we get that across to the audience who's listening?
I think we do it by example, right? Look at Leonie, when we had Leonie from Biome on the show, and her story of sitting in a room designing her game during lockdown over the course of a very short amount of time. Look at Randy, who we had last time, single-handedly designing and developing his set of games. Look at Mike, friend of the show, sitting and developing Plunder, playtesting, sitting back in his room, developing it by himself, and the rate at which they're able to design, test, change things. There's power in being the sole decision maker, and there's efficiency in being the sole decision maker. We're not doing it that way.
Nope.
I would even venture a guess that with the City Square team, their process is probably more efficient and expedited than ours, because there's only two, whereas we're working with a team of seven and we're working remotely. It's a different process. It's a different way. It's a different methodology. It's a different set of problems in how you create, prepare for play tests, run the play tests, go back and use the feedback to design. We're designing by largely committee. There is not one sole decision maker. And there are growing pains that are associated with that. See Tuckman. Check.
Way to sneak Tuckman in. And I want to add on to that, that something Peter had said to me recently in Discord is that the game that we are creating right now, none of the people who are working on the game, who are coming up with the mechanics, who are playtesting it, who are coming to our meetings, are people who had the initial vision for it. this was a game that was kind of pitched to us by Ryan, friend of the Misplay, who was kind of riffing off an idea that I had that I gave him and said, no, no, try it this way. And it's a really unique experience for us, of course, but I would imagine it's probably similar to how a lot of people working at a game design studio are. A lot of the games, I imagine that if I was an employee at a game company and I'm working on a game, odds are it wasn't my idea, right? If I'm not just a single person publishing. And Peter brought up some points like it has some advantages in that we're not emotionally, or at least Peter is not emotionally, I got to have hippos. Peter is not emotionally or attached to specific elements of the game. And if we were doing one of his games, like he and I have been talking about a car game where you're buying and selling used cars. If somebody said to him what we say in our meetings right now about an idea, something, right? Peter's emotionally attached to those things in the car game. You can't tell Peter he can't have that thing in his game. But when we're talking about Animal Kingdom, it's like, yeah, it's fine, I guess. We are not as emotionally attached to everything. So I think that's just like another layer on top of it.
I think that's interesting and illustrative of designing collectively is a double-edged sword, but also designing singularly is a double-edged sword. Because one might say a handful of people working on an idea that they're not deeply emotionally attached to may not be the best recipe in terms of what you're trying to create and how you're going to try to create. And you've told me a few times off mic, like, oh, you don't believe in the game yet, which I think is a fair assessment. But also, in light of the meetings that we've had the last 2 weeks, I am willing to be more invested in it now based on the work that we have done collectively, where previously the question had been, go sit in a room and work on things by yourself. And I've probably said this before, that's not me. The interest and the engaging part of building Animal Kingdom for me is in the collective action, the collective building of the game. And so now that we've started to shape our process in a way where we are collectively designing the game, it's much more interesting to me. And now I can see a vision for what the game is, and now I'm interested.
Some of the changes we've made to how we're using our meeting time have been put into place to kind of address that. So we meet once a week, and 2 weeks ago, I brought something different to our meetings. I kind of looked at it like how I'd structure a meeting if I was working with a group of teachers, or, you know, if I was working in business and
systems.
And we went back to our Zoom days from lockdown, breakout rooms. It was all about breakout rooms. So we split the team into two different teams, and we worked separately on different aspects of Animal Kingdom. We worked on character cards, hippos, influence trees, and events. And what we did was we spent 20 minutes on one set of those. So we kind of broke them up into categories. And then we took a break, and then we worked 20 minutes on the other set of categories. And so both teams were working simultaneously on different things. And then we came back together at the end. We had a debrief and we shared out. I think that meeting was really productive.
I think that meeting was not the kind of turn that Randy was talking about, because I don't think we're at the turn yet.
No, I
don't. Don't worry, guys. We'll get there. But it was a turn in the process, because sitting down and actually making decisions about what would or would not be present in the game, or what could or shouldn't be present in the game, one, is a better distribution of the workload, and two, having the opportunity to work in those groups and having something that we were able to then share, and the cross-referencing that you did where you can cross-reference and see, are there overlapping ideas? Are there ideas that aren't reconcilable? I think you get to a stronger conclusion about what events you should use when you have a wider variety. Then you can discuss and measure and weigh and make the decisions about what to put in from those lists with the team. And as a result, I feel like I came away from last week feeling like there was a collective vision starting to form. And now I very much see a collective vision for what this game can be, or what we collectively want it to be. I think having that element of shared vision, one, will make designing much more efficient for us, but two, gives everyone a common thing to look for when we test and when we're working on the game going forward. And so I would venture a guess that this playtest that we're preparing for after this meeting is going to be a turning point in our playtesting.
You said turn.
Not that turn.
I think we are coming up on that 40% point, though. I think we're coming up on it.
I agree.
The number Randy gave us.
And so I think for me, this is the playtest I'm looking forward to. This is the playtest that I wish, in my mind, there are a lot of ways that this is the first playtest.
Yeah. I thought you were going to say you wish this playtest that we're having right now happened 3 months ago. Because what I was thinking about, I was projecting, I was putting that on you. What I have been worried about as the project manager is the timeline and making sure that we can get to a point where number one goal is we are ready to have a playtestable version for Gen Con in the first exposure playtest hall. Have we said on the show, by the way, that we're doing that for sure? I think we've like casually mentioned it. And I know Plant with Sunglasses in Discord recently said, oh, I must have missed the news somewhere. I tweeted it out.
I blue skied it out.
I blue skied it out. And that might have been the only place I've actually said it. But yeah, we're officially in. We're going to be in the first exposure playtest hall at Gen Con. So timeline for me is like, whew, I'm nervous, right? We got to get, you know, not only a version we like, but I want to get some sort of prototype created. So we're not just playing, although if we have to be, just playing on paper cards, it's fine. People were doing it. I saw it.
I think there's solace in it can be whatever it is when we get there, because I don't think you can have the playtest we're about to have without the 3 months of group formation, development, work together, figuring out how to work collaboratively. I don't think you can have this playtest that's coming up without the foundation that we laid over the 3 months, even if it felt like growing pains.
Yeah, that's a good way to describe it, growing pains. And we have to keep remembering, we are not doing this full time. If we were doing this full time, and this is where we were at, then I would say, we're pretty far behind. But I don't think we are. I think we set the goals for us, not fully understanding what needed to be done to get there. We have this roadmap and this picture, and we can say we have to, you know, be at a certain point by a certain time, but working with people in different parts of the country, working online and trying to figure out how to collaborate. It's not that it's taking more time than it should. It's just, we didn't know how much time it was going to take.
And there is a very determined moment of, we're showing the game at Gen Con.
Right.
Woo.
Woo. Nice. And hopefully we're showing it at KublaCon in May in Burlingame.
It can be less done then. It's fine.
It's going to be less done, but I think that'll be really good practice for us to be there at that table.
Just wait until my behavioral skills protocol system for how to teach people how to play the game. You're going to love that.
That does not sound like it's going to be fun. Remember I told you, you got 45 seconds. You got to get them interested in the game.
Which is why you need a thing so that you can practice.
What thing?
A procedure.
Is it a fun procedure? It's not Tuckman, is it?
No, it's teach somebody how to play your game in 45 seconds in a way that makes them want to sit down and play it.
Yes, we want to practice that. So, the way you said it was less fun. It sounded system-y.
Same thing. You need systems in the back end, ask Scott.
Yes, we want to perfect our pitch. And that's something Mike C got to work on this week. We keep talking about it. Mike C has been working on Plunder. He's been playtesting with our group in Discord. If you want to come playtest Mike C's game, pop in the Discord. Check out the playtest channel. Or maybe you have another game that you're building. You're listening to us and you're like, oh, I have a game that I'm building too. Come to our Discord. Pop in the playtest. We'll be happy to play it with you. And Mike just went to a convention in Rochester, New York, and for the first time, put his game in front of people who weren't us or weren't his family, and got feedback, got practice pitching his game to other people. That was one of the things that he said it was most valuable to him, was learning how to do that, learning how to sell his game and get people interested in. And he was keeping an email list and people were signing up and he was thrilled. Yeah, I want to learn how to do that. I need to practice that.
So you remember on the way home from San Jose?
Yes.
We were sitting riding in the car.
Go on.
And I asked you, what's the moment you want to capture in Animal Kingdom? Do you see it yet?
I remember you asking the question and I remember I gave you a little bit of silence. I just didn't really give it the attention that that question deserves. And it is absolutely an answer I need to know. I need to know that. I can't do anything else on that game unless I know that. I think that drives what it is we're creating. It also drives how I talk about the game to somebody else. So I would say the moment that I'm trying to capture is, and before I give you my answer, we should, the same thing we talked about earlier, I'm not the only person making this game. And so my answer is going to be different from your answer. And your answer is going to be different from Peter's. Peter's answer is going to be different than Scott's. And Scott's answer is going to be different than Brian's. And Brian's is going to, there's other people working on this game. So it's okay that we can kind of view it differently because I don't think there's any way to create a game. Who said it? Where did I hear this? It was somewhere on Blue Sky this week. When you try to make a game for everybody, you make a game for no one. And but here's my moment right now. And some of this comes from conversations with you. I think you've helped shape it a little bit in my mind, is that the moment in this game is when you are building your character. So you're playing as a character and we'll have different characters in the game, but you're playing as a character and you're building the platform in the game that you want to be known for. You're deciding in this playthrough of the game, the type of person you want to be. Well, as you run for, you know, the ruler of the forest, the jungle, and you've decided on these different issues that are important to you, and then you go somewhere to campaign, to draw people into in front of you or to bank them. And so it's building your character to a point where you're like, yeah, this is what I want to be known for in the game. And then you go somewhere and the people there acknowledge you and say, yeah, I'm with you. Let's go in front of that person. Let's go vote for that person because they reflect who we are. That's what I'm going for.
Your pitch has gotten a lot better.
Thanks.
I find it compelling. How much do you think our game is going to cost?
$500?
I was going to say, you've sold me up on the like $25.
I don't think we can even like throw real numbers out there yet. I know like a number I want to stay under, but I'm not saying anything right now. I want the heavy pieces. I want the linen card backs. I want, you know, all the cool stuff.
You sold me on some number that I think I could afford. I'm not buying your $500 Animal Kingdom.
Did you want to share your moment?
I will in a second, but I'm curious. I hear a lot of what my answer to that question is in what you just shared. So my question is this now your vision? Or are you just telling me the answer that you think I want to hear?
No, it's my vision, but I'll add that it has evolved. This wasn't the same vision I had 3 months ago. It's evolved from our conversations between you and I, on the show, in the car ride, at our meetings. I've said it before on the show, there's been moments in the meetings where other people are talking and I'm just like, yes, that's... There's a song lyric that I love. You probably know it. Favorite all-time lyric ever. And it's the only way I've learned to describe or express myself is through other people's descriptions of life. And I love that. It's Motion City Soundtrack. And other people have always kind of helped shape how I see things, I think, is the way to say that. I think other people help bring out the things that I want to see. And another example of that is we've been talking about changing the traits in the game. That right now the traits on the cards are all about the animals. They're, you know, whether it's a strong animal, it's a carnivore, or if it's how it moves, if it's swimming, if it's walking. We were talking recently about those aren't really the issues that you campaign on. The issues that you would campaign on are the environment or how you're going to change some other law or policy to benefit the people in a habitat. And those things have like, yes, I'm like, yes, that's where we need to go. Like, so I don't know. I think you've helped shape my vision for sure, but also like clarify what I want.
I'll give you my answer then.
Okay.
More than anything in this game, I want to feel the sense of building my political platform. Boy, that sounds really terrible to say because I don't want to have anything to do with politics.
Right. Understood.
But they exist. And so in playing this game, I want to build my platform where I'm trying to help out the little creatures. I want to be with the social team. And I want to pick up and support the causes, the policies, and the issues that bring those voters to me. And that's, I think, a piece that I was missing. I really like the image of going to the watering hole and standing up with my platform and seeing those small social creatures come to me. Mine has also changed and evolved, if you will.
It's the only way I've learned to express myself is through other people's descriptions of life.
Gonna have to listen to the song on the way home. I'm not sure that does it for me.
Favorite moment from the car ride was re-listening to the beginning of our Gen Con episode from, you know, last August. And what was there was a moment, right? Wasn't there a moment where I said exactly what I had said? You had said something, and then I responded in the car exactly how I responded on the show a half a second later. That was great.
And you said, "We are the people that we are," and that's incredibly accurate. The Misplay podcast is brought to you by Mike C., Missy, JP Savard, Parney, Kyle Flowers, Adjos, Brian, Bins, and Peter. Consider donating at patreon.com/themisplay. If you'd like to become a featured sponsor of the show, find our FAQ in Discord. I think it was really re-energizing to leave Game Maker. It was really, there's your outtakes. Mark gets annoyed with himself.
Supercut.
I found it really energizing to came away